Is this thing on? Word.
This is the Rookie Sports Report, hosted by Matthew Frizzell.
4 runs off the Detroit Tigers, who are the 10th worst in all of baseball.
And Logan Weber.
But this man was swallowed whole by a whale.
Presented by 96.9, 99.9, and AM 1060, ESPN, The Jock.
Everybody love everybody! Come on!
You know what I love besides everybody, Logan? Actually, that's a lie. I don't love everybody. But you know what I do love, just all in general?
What's that?
College basketball.
Couldn't agree more.
And it began last night. We kind of alluded to the matchups previously yesterday in yesterday's version of the podcast. Actually, I haven't uploaded that because we had technical issues yesterday uploading the podcast. So I go over to upload it on, you know, our various links, however you may listen to our podcast via Spotify, Apple, iTunes, or whatever. And I click upload on the podcast. And let's just say the upload was going slower than my mile time. It was, I'd sit there for like 4 or 5 minutes, 1%. Another 4 or 5 minutes, 2%. I didn't have time for that. So, had to get out of here. Probably upload it right before we conclude this episode, the Wednesday edition of the Rookie Sports Report podcast. Here, of course, we're presented by ESPN The Jock, as always. Unless we go to, like, you know, Fox Sports The Jock or CBS Sports The Jock or whatever. But anyway, that's besides the point. Like I said, college basketball, I love watching it. It's that time of year. But, you know, kind of dealing with local teams here. We talk about, we're based in Springfield, Missouri. So the team we cover the most, Division I-wise, is Missouri State. And man, oh man. Actually, it's kind of funny. Vegas had a line on the Missouri State SEMO game.
Mm-hmm.
SEMO, Southeast Missouri State, the Red Hawks, they were 16-point underdogs.
16-point dogs.
And they dogged Missouri State in front of their home arena last night, winning it 99-94. Missouri State, a Division I college, puts up 94 points, which is hard to do in college basketball, as you all know, and you lose. SEMO shot 57% from the field. Missouri State shot 52% from the field. Both teams had a express lane to the line. I think like 30-plus free throws were shot by each side. And, you know, not a lot of defense was played, but there was less defense played by Missouri State, and that's why SEMO won, 99-94.
Yeah, taking a look and being here at the studio last night running the game, you couldn't help but notice, like you said, first things first, the amount of free throws that were put up last night. Between these two teams, 69 free throw attempts were put up.
Nice.
Missouri State shot 25 of 35. Gage Prim specifically had 16 free throw attempts by himself. He made 12 of those 16 attempts. So you look at that for both of these teams and determine there were a ton of fouls called, especially in the second half. I mean, both teams were in the double bonus before we reached the under 12 timeout. I mean, a ton of fouls throughout the course of this game. But SEMO shot better from the free throw line than Missouri State did. They shot 27 of 34, which comes out to about 79.5%. Missouri State shot 25 of 35, which comes out to about 71.5%. So, I mean, about an 8% difference there. I mean, it's not a huge amount, but, you know, Missouri State made two less free throws on one more attempt. You take a look at that, and if you shoot 28 of 35, while SEMO shoots 27 of 34, that puts you in a similar place in terms of percentages, and that puts you within 2 points of winning this game. But the bigger factor in this game last night was three-point shooting. SEMO shot 8 of 19 from the three-point line. That is 42.1%. Now, they only shot 6 threes in the second half. They shot 13 threes in the first half, made 5 of them. And in the second half, they only shot 6, but they made 3 of those. And 2 of those came in the last 2 minutes of the game. Straight up daggers that really put this game out of reach for Missouri State. Now, Missouri State crawled back in it. They were within 2 under a minute to go, but a three-pointer by Simo put this game on ice with about 6 seconds left. And that was just, it was entertaining to listen to all the points that were being scored, the really up and down nature of the game. But in listening to Coach Dana Ford afterwards in his post game, he was really, really critical of himself for the way that the game was coached last night. And you know, I understand that's a coach's job is to defend their players by taking the brunt of the heat themselves. But there is some blame that needs to be put on the players from Missouri State. Not saying that they played poorly offensively, because they did not. Offensively, they were lights out. But to allow 99 points to a team in Southeast Missouri that won 11 games last season, a team from the Ohio Valley Conference, which is not even close to the same tier in terms of mid-major conferences as Missouri State or the Missouri Valley is.
Yeah.
I mean, you take a look at Missouri at mid-major conferences, you look at the WAC, you know, over there with Gonzaga and St. Mary's, and Missouri Valley is right up there. Not necessarily up there with the WAC because of Gonzaga being the national power that they are.
Second, I'd say, to the WAC.
Missouri State is a team that maybe could have made an NCAA tournament last year. Drake, University of Northern Iowa, Loyola Chicago. Yeah. You know, you had two teams from the Missouri Valley that made the NCAA tournament last year, which is a rarity for a mid-major school. The Missouri Valley is a top-tiered mid-major conference, and the Ohio Valley isn't. And Missouri State's a team that won 17 games a season ago. SEMO won 11. This is a team you looked at and thought, we are the better team. You return two preseason all-conference players in Gage Prim and Isaiah Mosley, and a great transfer in Donovan Clay, who, by the way, put up great numbers in his first career game with
the Bears.
Best
player from Valparaiso the year before, yeah.
A transfer from Valpo, who in his first game at Missouri State dropped 20 points in 36 minutes on 8 of 10 shooting. That's a pretty good night. He finished the game, he had four rebounds, two offensive, two defensive, and, you know, he did his job in terms of scoring the basketball. Each of these two teams had five players score in double figures. The only problem is for Missouri State, those five players in double figures scored 90 of the team's 94 points. You know, Jalen Minnett had 14. DeMarcus Sharp had 12. Isaiah Mosley had 16. Donovan Clay had 20. And Gage Prim was the leading scorer of the night for both teams. He had 28 points and 15 rebounds on the night in 32 minutes of play. But a ton of fouls. Missouri State had 22 fouls on the night. On the flip side of that, looking at SEMO, Eric Reed Jr. was their leading scorer with 21 points. Chris Harris had 19. Nana Akinton had 13. Niangle Russell had 14. Manny Patterson had 11. But then you look at some of the other guys that contributed. Sam Thompson had 5 points. Phillip Russell had 3. Parker Long had 5. DQ Nicholas had 4. Chase Thompson had 4. So they got contributions from other guys other than, you know, those five guys that dropped double figures. And 26 personal fouls for SEMO. Foul trouble galore.
Yeah,
and
like
when you
I
have
said.
Guys in foul trouble, you need other players to come in and contribute and score points.
Yeah.
And Missouri State didn't do that. But first and foremost, this all comes down to defense. That's why Missouri State lost this game. If you score 94 points in a college basketball game, you should win by 20. You should. Or at least win by double figures. But you lost. And that's a disappointing thing. So I'm sure Coach Ford is being hard on himself, very critical of the players right now, trying to get the defense in order, and I'm sure they will. This team's too talented to let this game, an opening season loss to a Southeast Missouri team, drag them down. And they're gonna turn it around. But they have to turn it around quickly because you've got Alabama State coming to town on Saturday.
Yeah, and they play in a tough conference that plays a lot of tough opponents. But, yeah, this is what Dana Ford had to say afterwards about, you know, him saying this was on him. If it wants to play, and it does not. That's fantastic. Thank you. Thank you, Audacity, for bringing that up. You know, we actually just had a meeting here at Zimmer Stations about you guys just praising Adobe Audition or whatever.
Got to get it, man. Got to get into Audition.
I can't, dude. Like, it's so...
If you put it into Audition, it's not connected to the internet, so it will automatically play regardless.
Audacity doesn't connect to the internet.
Well, I don't know. Maybe Audacity just has issues. issues. Maybe it does.
I know, I have a hard time speaking as well. That's why, well, that's perfect that, you know, your girlfriend's going into speech pathology because she can help you and me out.
I suppose so. I suppose.
Say, does she ever practice any kind of techniques with you at home? Like speech?
Occasionally, she'll use me as a guinea pig for homework.
That's, oh, yeah?
Yeah, sometimes.
Sometimes. If I can find this stupid clip. Ah, well, can't find it. Or, actually, I can find it. It just doesn't want to play. But, you know, yeah, basically, he came out and just said, like, you know, this is on me, guys. You know, I should have coached them better. I should have coached them defensively better. And, like you said, you put up 94 points in a college basketball game. You're going to win. If Missouri State does that 30 times, they're going to be
if you
a
put
20,
up,
25 win team easily.
If you put up 94 points in an NBA game, you might win.
Well, I'd say that limits 100.
I said might.
Yeah, might. Very, very might. Here, let's try
all
this.
All of our players.
Oh, you hear that? It played in the background there for a second, of course. It's just teasing me at this point. But this is what Coach Dana Ford had to say about his team's defense last night.
All of our players need to defend better, and that's me. This whole thing was, they just, you know, I did not do my job today. I've got to get these guys. I've got to do a better job.
I mean, yeah, as a coach, yeah, and you pointed it out. As a coach in the media, you're going to be like, all right, you know, this loss was on me. I did a poor job coaching. Coach doesn't play 30 to 35 minutes on the court against college kids, you know, 20 to 22 years old, highly offensive college kids. You know, like, some of the onus has to fall on the players. But you do have to wonder, this is the second year in a row now, I believe, where Missouri State dropped a game at home that they shouldn't have. Remember last year they lost to either Arkansas, Little Rock, or Arkansas State at home to start their season, and it shocked everybody. And it kind of set the tone for their season in general, though they did make it to the Missouri Valley Conference semifinals and lost.
Yeah, they went 17-7.
Yeah, they had a good year and took the best team in the conference, Drake, down to the wire and lost, I believe, by 2 points, 1 or 2 points. And it came on a game winner from one of their players that now either plays for Kansas or has straight up graduated. So I think the jury's still out on if Dana Ford's still a good coach or not, because, you know, 2 years ago, they were expected to win the Valley outright, and they underperformed. Last year, they had a lot of good returners coming back. They lost some talent, obviously, but they went 17-7. Like you said, that's not too shabby, especially in the Missouri Valley Conference.
Yeah, and here's the thing. They went 17-7 last season. Here are their losses, okay? They beat you and I on the road in Cedar Falls and then lost to you and I the following night also in Cedar Falls. So you lost the game to you and I on the road, right?
Yeah.
You lose two games back-to-back against Drake at home. Drake was one of those two teams, along with Loyola Chicago, that got into the NCAA tournament last year. You lost two games to Loyola Chicago right after that, in the midst of a four-game losing streak, but you're playing the two best teams in the conference. You know, the unfortunate part is all four of those games were played at home, and you lost all four. That's tough. And then you lose the season finale against Evansville on the road after having beat them the night before. But a tough concept to have to beat a team twice on back-to-back nights. That's a tough thing to try and ask. And then you lost to Drake, as you said, in the semifinal of the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament. So six of your seven losses were against you and I, Loyola Chicago, and Drake, the teams that finished first, second, and third in the Missouri Valley last season.
Tough.
Or first, second, and fourth. Missouri State finished third.
Right.
And you split that series against Northern Iowa. So those are six of your seven losses are to the teams that finished first, second, and fourth in the league. That is a pill you can swallow, I guess. Now, you know, you hope that you could catch maybe half of those. You know, if you win three of those seven three of those six regular season games that you lost, that's a 20-win season, and that pushes you towards a 2 or a 1 seed and possibly getting yourself into a position for an automatic bid in the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament, or maybe even an at-large bid, because as we've mentioned, being the second or third best team in the Missouri Valley might be enough to push you into a conversation for an at-large bid in the NCAA Tournament.
Right.
But to say that the jury's still out on Dana Ford being a good coach, I disagree with. I think Dana Ford is a good coach. I think he's the right guy to put this program in a position to compete for Missouri Valley Conference championships and get them in a position to do that. But it's a harder task,
sure,
in my eyes, than what maybe Coach Mox walked into when she first got hired at Missouri State. The Missouri State women's program is established as a, I guess, a blue blood within the mid-major conferences, right? Not a blue blood in the sense of a national title contender, but a perennial NCAA tournament team, Sweet 16 appearances, you know, the occasional Elite Eight or Final Four sprinkled in there. That's what the women's team expects year in and year out with the program that they have. Missouri State's men's team isn't there yet, but I think Coach Ford can put this team and is putting this team in the right direction to get there.
Well, I feel like he's running out of time because there are a lot of people that are really impatient, especially about the men's team, especially with how talented this team is. And I know we're I'm overreacting over one loss in an opening night game, but You can't have losses like this to open the series. You can't, or to open the season. You cannot expect to have these kind of losses and be, you know what? They're going to be a competitive team this year because the Missouri State men's team hasn't made an NCAA appearance in a tournament since 1999. 22 years. Going to be 23 if they don't make it this year.
But that's an impossible thing to do consistently at the mid-major level when you only get one guaranteed automatic bid. When you're a mid-major school, when you are not...
But you think something would go right in 23 years, wouldn't you?
Like, But here's the thing. I think things are going right. Dana Ford was hired in 2018. All right? His first season at Missouri State was 2018-2019. They went 16-16. Two seasons ago in 2019-2020, they went 16-17. And then last season...
That's the season you underperformed.
Right. Then last season, you go 17-7. So the improvement is there. You played less games, but at 17-7, if you would have played 31 or 32 or 33 games, you're probably looking at a 21-11 mark or a 22-10, whatever.
I think if he regresses, he'll be in real dangerous trouble this season. If he does not get better than 17-7 this season, I mean, of course, we saw the two seasons that he had prior. What was he, 16-16 first year, then 16-17 that next year?
Right.
And that was the year that I talked about where he underperformed. There was a lot of talent on that team, and they just could not perform. If he has a season like that again, I feel like a lot of heads are going to start turning over there at Missouri State. And I'm not wishing Dana Ford the worst. He's a great guy and a great coach, I feel like, as well. You want to see results.
It's not
especially when it's been 22 years since you've seen a good result.
Right. It's been 22 years. Don't panic. It's not time to press that button, okay? It's game one. There are 30 games left in this season. It is not time to panic at all. If they lose this opening round game, right here, they could turn around and beat Alabama State, beat Sam Houston State, win the freaking Naples Invitational, and I mean they could rattle off five or six straight wins, and then you're not even going to remember the loss to SEMO. That's how sports work. It's not time to panic.
Right, winning solves a lot of problems. You and I know that very, very well.
It's one game. It's one game out of 25 plus. I'm not sure exactly. I think this year is more back to normal. I think they have around 30 regular season games. So there's 25 plus games left in this season. Okay, it's not time to panic or talk about Dana Ford's on the hot seat or fire Dana Ford after game one. It's not time for that.
Sheriff, this is no time to panic. This is the perfect time to panic.
It is not. It is not the perfect time to panic.
I had to pull that audio bit up, but I agree with you in that sense, but it's just, like I said, and I'll say this one more time, we kind of saw this last year, and I'm just saying it may be a precursor for this year. We don't know. That's in the future, and we don't know the future. We just live in the now and try to remember the past, even though we at times want to forget everything that we had going on for us in the past.
Offense, I think that would just like click. Still, I know the if you added Odell to Kansas City, that offense, I think that would just like click.
Still,
I know the
offensive
line, everything, but they lack depth in terms of receiving targets. Not on the, I mean, like how many really top flight receiving targets? If you put Odell with Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, and now Mecole Hardman is the fourth option as a target, that's a lot. It's a lot.
More suited to go to Kansas City and have success and impact the team and then get another contract extension as opposed to the football side of
and
going to the Rams
and
then
there's
having to find another place
season.
To year out.
We can hang out in L.A.
Hold on, Molly. With all
That's, you know, honestly, that sounds like every kind of First Take episode, just a bunch of voices just talking amongst each other. But, yeah, those clips are pertaining to Odell Beckham Jr., who is now a free agent. After yesterday, he cleared waivers. None of the 30 teams, shockingly, claimed him in that time frame, and now he's a free agent. And last I checked, there are three teams. That Oxford is so bad. But anyway, there are three teams that are interested in Odell Beckham.
Or that Odell Beckham is interested
Odell Beckham is interested in. I don't know if the other teams are going to be, you know, if that feeling is mutual. But the Giants, the Packers, and the Saints are what Odell has on his mind, or not the Giants, excuse me.
Chiefs, excuse me. Packers and Saints.
Yeah, Chiefs, Packers, and Saints. Yeah, why the hell do you want to go back to New York? Anyway, that's besides the point. You know, I still believe there is talent there for Odell Beckham, obviously. Of course, he was an absolute nightmare watching him as a Cowboys fan when he was with the Giants. Him, Eli Manning, Saquon Barkley, you know, that team that didn't really materialize to anything, but do you want that kind of personality on your team? Do you want all the gimmicks that come along with him? Like I said, a very, very talented player. Dude can jump up and catch the ball with the best of them. One of the better receivers, if not still one of the top five receivers if he ever plays. Do you want that on your team? If I'm Kansas City and that's pertaining to our market, I don't know.
Yes. Yes, I do. Why is this a conversation that we're having? What do you mean, why? I don't care what the guy... I mean, as long as he's not in legal trouble, which he's not. People in the media, which I understand is like that's us, are portraying him as a bad teammate. He's this, he's that, he's a distraction. Why don't you follow... Why don't you go on Twitter, go on Facebook, on Instagram, whatever, and find this guy's teammates. Go find Jarvis Landry on Twitter. Go find Jabril Peppers and all these guys that he was teammates with, whether that was in New York or in Cleveland, and read what they have to say about Odell. Jarvis Landry came out and said Odell Beckham was the best teammate he's ever had. So the extracurriculars of, he dances and he's popular on social media and he's this and he's that. Who cares? Who cares? Who gives a bleep? As long as the guy does his job on the field. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that he's at the same level as these guys, but do you think the people of Minnesota or the people of New England cared what Randy Moss did on or off the field when he was catching touchdown passes? Do you think the people of Cincinnati gave a damn what Chad Ochocinco, Chad Johnson was doing on the field or changing his name or whatever he was doing as long as he was catching touchdown passes? Brandon Marshall the same way? No, you don't care as long as the guy does his job. And when Odell Beckham is healthy and when he gets the target that a player of his caliber deserves, he puts up the numbers.
Well, how many? Okay, so say he does go to Kansas City. You think how many targets do you think he's going to get? Because he's already competing with Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and now Josh Gordon and Mecole Hardman.
You really think that he's going to compete for targets with Mecole Hardman and DeMarcus Robinson?
I don't believe so. No, but he's going to get less targets because he has Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill as teammates.
Or he's going to get more targets because of that. Because what we're seeing from Kansas City and teams playing against the Chiefs right now is they're playing two deep high safeties over the top, taking Tyreek Hill and his speed out of the equation. You're seeing guys jam Travis Kelce at the line of scrimmage, getting guys underneath and over the top of Travis Kelce, covering up those zones where Travis Kelce and the thing he's so good at is getting into zones and setting up and putting himself in a position where he catches the ball between a linebacker and a corner or a linebacker and a safety that's coming down into the flat. That's what Travis Kelce is so good at, and defenses are doing a great job of trying to take away those two things. Travis Kelce is not healthy right now. just watching the guy play, it's very, very obvious to see he is not 100%. He's having issues in terms of his physical health, and it's affecting other parts of his game. His ability, he's had an issue with drops over the course of the last several weeks. Tyreek Hill,
a lot of
KC
players has had that problem. Yeah,
Mecole Hardman has had issues holding on to the football, fumble issues in and of itself. This is a Chiefs team that, you know, when they're at their best, they are at their best when they have Tyreek Hill doing his thing, Travis Kelce doing his thing, and having a reliable number two option. The Chiefs don't have that right now. I don't know if Josh Gordon can get there. Maybe he can, but he's only been with the team for a couple of weeks. And he's been out of the league for a pretty long time. You know, he, for in my opinion, very stupid, irresponsible reasons, the NFL finally did the right thing and stopped testing for marijuana and suspending guys for a freaking year for marijuana use. They finally got rid of that. So, but because of that, Josh Gordon has played, you know, two games this season, three games that season, didn't play this season, and four games the next season because of these suspensions and these things with marijuana. So he hasn't had a lot of NFL run. Odell Beckham has been injured, but has been on an NFL team, learning NFL offenses and being a part of an NFL team his entire career. So he can come in and he can get acclimated to a new offense pretty quickly, I believe. What Odell Beckham does when he's healthy and when he's on the floor, on the field, is puts up his numbers and allows for his teammates to get open as well. You know, and yeah, it hasn't been the same, I guess you could say, since his first 3 years in New York. You know, his last season in New York, he had 101 catches for 1,300 yards and 10 touchdowns. He hasn't had more than six in a season since. But despite that, I mean, in 2017, he got hurt. That was the year that he got hurt. But he had 25 catches before he got hurt early on in that season. And then his first 2 years, his last year in New York and his first year in Cleveland, he had 70-plus catches for 1,000-plus yards. The touchdowns weren't there. That is what it is. But he does, when he's healthy and when he gets the opportunities that he is a player of his caliber should get, he's a guy that can be a Pro Bowler at the wide receiver position. If you can bring him in on what is going to be a contract that is not as high as you would think a guy like Odell Beckham should get, why not take a chance at that? You know, the news article came out, the Packers offered him a vet minimum. If you can get Odell Beckham for the veteran's minimum, or maybe a little bit above that, maybe throw in some bonuses or something like that, why not take a chance on that? What's, I mean, really, I don't think it's going to hurt anything. Because 99 of the 100 things you've read about Odell Beckham from his own teammates has been nothing but positive. He's never been a locker room hazard. He's never been described as a bad teammate. Beside people in the media coming out and saying these things. And maybe that's his former teammates that are, you know, being two-faced on online and on their Twitter pages and whatever saying these things. But everything I've seen from the actual Twitter pages of his teammates has been nothing but positive. So I don't see a situation where you don't try to take a chance on getting a guy like Odell Beckham and improving your offense. I know the defense needs work, but there's no players like Odell Beckham available in terms of a defense right now. So why not take a shot on a guy like Odell Beckham on a one-year deal and put yourself in a position where you can offensively compete for a Super Bowl again? When the defense has been playing much better the last few weeks as well. I just want to point that out.
Yeah, but I mean, they played the New York Giants, the defense we're talking about here, who are anemic offensively, and then you play a Aaron Rodgers-less Green Bay Packers squad with Jordan Love that looked completely lost out there. Poor guy. Yeah, I can see maybe the defense being better, but in regards to OBJ, I understand where you're coming from in the fact that it can't hurt. But, you know, I don't buy into the fact that he is not a distraction at some point, because I'm sure players see the kind of stuff that his inner circle posts on social media or wherever or what have you. That can't not creep into their mind at some point, but You know, who knows? Because I certainly don't. You know, he could...
If his inner circle posts something, that is what it is. What is he... He's supposed to control other human beings and what they put out? You know, he could go to his inner circle. He could go to his dad or his brother or his best friends or whoever and be like, hey, man, don't do that. Don't post that kind of stuff. And they may or may not listen. They may post it still regardless. I don't see that as much of a reflection of him. Why is it that somebody that is associated with him and attached to him, that is somehow reflective of what he is as a person? When somebody who isn't him says something about his situation, I don't understand that. To me, that frustrates me, and it's the same thing that frustrates me about fans in the NFL right now that are going at Patrick Mahomes' family, and his mom and his wife and his brother and all that stuff for the stuff that they're putting out. Who cares? I mean, legitimately, who cares?
It's just funny to see.
If his wife put something on Twitter saying, like, that was an illegal hit, you're going to get him hurt, that's just her being concerned about the well-being of her husband and the father of her child.
Right.
Anybody else in the same situation would do the same damn thing. If his mom put something on social media about that, that's an illegal hit. That's a roughing the passer. That's this, that's that. That's her defending her child from the possibility of getting hurt, which we've seen him get hurt in years past from hits that could be determined as questionable at best. Okay, it's happened throughout the league. You're trying to defend a guy like that, you know? What if Joe Flacco's wife would have gotten on Twitter afterwards after he got his freaking head taken off and said something? Would people have gone at his wife on Twitter like, oh, well, just shut your mouth, you blah, blah, blah? No, because he almost freaking died if you saw that hit. Okay, it's a part of life. You know, when you see somebody you love getting hit in that way, because that's the nature of the NFL. It's a very physical game. It's a very violent act. You're going to get nervous. You're going to get skeptical at times, and you're going to have things to say and let those people say those things. But then for them to say those things and then you to attack Patrick Mahomes over it like he had something to do with it, while his wife or his mom or his brother tweet something out or puts a TikTok out while he's on the field playing a football game. What in the world does that have to do with him? I don't get it. Stop trying to associate people that are around this person with the person themselves. They're not the ones tweeting it out. They're not the ones saying it. They're not the ones putting the freaking TikTok dances together. That's not them. That's somebody associated with them, and it should be taken as something as such. Okay? You don't like what Jackson Mahomes puts on his TikTok, that's fine. That's Jackson Mahomes. That has nothing to do with Patrick Mahomes. Nothing. So stop trying to correlate those two things when the correlation doesn't exist. End of soapbox.
Say, you're way high up on that soapbox. You flash forward a day to therapy session. Hell, you've done that 2 days in a row now.
I have. I've been bottling some things up, apparently.
Say, apparently you need to go to a therapist instead of wasting your time here on this podcast.
I need to. That's true.
I don't know, but, you know, like I said, like, I don't hate the talents of Odell Beckham Jr. You know, he can be a dynamic threat. I still believe that. It's just the stuff that goes on outside. And, yes, some of it is some of his control, some of it isn't. And I echo... this audio jack, I'm having some equipment malfunction again here, but anyway... His talents are there, but it's just the off-field kind of stuff that some of it he does control and some of it he can't control. Some of it he does control and some of it he cannot. He does not.
Like, what does he do on social media? What does he do off the field that guys like Chase Claypool or Juju Smith-Schuster do? Don't do.
Well, like, he seen his arguing with coaches or whatever. He, of course, had that debacle in New York where he had this love-hate relationship with the goddamn goal net or whatever in New York or wherever. That's that kind of personality, you know?
Players get in arguments with coaches all the time. All the time. It happens at every level. I've seen it happen at the high school level. It happens at the college level. And it certainly happens at the NFL level because everybody there is an adult. Everybody there is a grown man or woman that is associated with that football team. So there's going to be disputes. There's going to be arguments. There's going to be p- pushing and shoving and, you know, go to an NFL training camp. I urge you, go to like an NFL training camp for maybe 3 or 4 days. I guarantee on average you're going to see a fist fight a day. A day. It always happens. So let's not act like it's so out of the ordinary for players to get into an argument with a coach. When it gets physical, yeah, that's an issue. Okay, but to say that an argument with a coach somehow makes him a detriment to a team, I think is just completely asinine, blasphemous. You can go on YouTube and you can watch videos of Peyton Manning or Tom Brady getting into arguments with there's a very viral video of Jeff Saturday and Peyton Manning. Jeff Saturday was the starting center for the Colts teams for all those years.
Right.
Him and Jeff Saturday getting into a full-on argument, cursing back and forth at each other for probably 2 or 3 solid minutes, going at it. The next drive, they go out, march the ball down the field 85 yards for a touchdown. Because they're two grown men who understand that arguments and disagreements are going to happen. You settle it, solve your differences, you go out and we play football. Videos of Tom Brady and Josh McDaniels butting heads, arguing back and forth. Tom Brady and Bill Belichick butting heads, arguing back and forth. They have their dispute, they squash it, and they go out and play football. That's how the game works. And some guys just vent their frustrations another way. Some guys wear their emotions on their sleeve. I'm one of those guys, okay? So Odell Beckham, yeah, it's a funny video of him, you know, hitting the kicking net and the kicking net hit back. It's a funny video. I can understand that. I've been there, all right? I played basketball in high school. I played multiple sports, but basketball was sort of my bread and butter. You know, getting upset playing high school basketball, what do you do? Well, for me, it was, the, you know, the smacking my hands on the floor thing. And then your hands sting for probably a minute or two because you just smack the floor as hard as humanly possible. I don't think that makes you a bad person or a bad teammate or a distraction or a detriment to your team. It shows that you have fire, you have passion. Maybe you need to control it in a better way, but I don't think that makes you a bad teammate or somebody that's a distraction to the way that your team's trying to conduct themselves.
Point taken. Fair enough. Speaking on the college or topic of college basketball, we kind of glanced over Missouri State men. Of course, they lost to SEMO, but of course there were some marquee matchups last night. First up, involving a couple of Big 12, actually, no, not Big 12, correction, just a couple of Power 5 school, a couple of blue bloods, you could say. Michigan State in Kansas. Michigan State, unranked in Kansas, was ranked either 9 or 12. I can't think of it.
They were ranked number 3. Oh, Kansas 3. Was number 3 in the country.
I'm thinking of the
Duke-Kentucky
game. But anyway, that's besides the point. Kansas comes out and shows why they're ranked number 3, yep. Defeating Michigan State handily. And then, of course, the nightcap of that tournament or that festival, shootout, whatever you want to call it, over there in Madison Square Garden. Duke versus Kentucky, and the Blue Devils come out victorious against the two Blue Bloods, winning it by a final of, it was over 7 points, I believe, was the spread of that game.
Mm.
So yeah, good games all around.
Absolutely. Taking a look, first of all, at the Kansas-Michigan State game. Kansas gets the win 87-74. Okai Agbaji had a career night, dropped 29 points. Which was a career high in terms of scoring for him. They got some contributions from some other guys as well. David McCormick finished with 10 points. Remy Martin in his first game at the University of Kansas, a double transfer, I guess you could say, from Nevada to Arizona State, now to the University of Kansas, had 15 as well in that one. And then, you know, for Michigan State, their leading scorer was actually came off the bench in terms of A.J. Hoggard, a sophomore from Coatesville, Pennsylvania. He had 17 last night to pace the Spartans. And then their second leading scorer also came off the bench. That's not necessarily a recipe for success for your top two leading scorers to be guys that came off the bench to help contribute to your team. That being Julius Marble II, a junior from Dallas. Mind you, Marble scored those 13 points in just 16 minutes. He had 13.7 rebounds in just 16 minutes of play. To finish second on the team for Michigan State. But as you said, Kansas proving early on this year why they have that number 3 ranking to open up this season. And then the other one we had this week, the State Farm Champions Classic games that took place in Madison Square Garden last night. Duke with a 79-71 win over Kentucky. And, you know, Coach K in his final season at Duke, his final game coached at Madison Square Garden, off to a hot start. 79-71 win. Taking a look at it, a couple of great scoring nights for Duke in terms of Trevor Keels had 25 points to lead all Duke scorers, lead all scorers overall in that game, a freshman from Maryland. And then the second leading scorer in the game was the second leading scorer for Duke, which was Paolo Banchero, which is a freshman from Seattle. Two big guys at 6'9 and 6'10 that play sort of combo guard sort of positions, and that's just sort of, you know, where the game is trending towards. And then for Kentucky, 17 points for, I'm not even sure how to pronounce this name, Oscar Tshiebwe. I'll go ahead with that one. He's from the Congo. Had 17 last night. And then Sevier Wheeler, a 5'9 junior from Texas, point guard, had 16 for Kentucky. But before we move on, we talked to Missouri State men's basketball. I want to briefly talk some Lady Bears.
They Missouri got a win State last Lady night Bears. As well.
Yeah, got the win 76-62 over Arkansas Little Rock. It was the final score does not indicate how close this game was. It was back and forth the entire night. It felt like late in that fourth quarter, Missouri State kind of ran away with it. But it was close pretty much throughout the entire night between these two teams. For Missouri State, paced by Mariah White with 24 points on the evening. Jasmine Franklin had 18 points and 13 rebounds, a first-team All-Missouri Valley Conference performer from a year ago coming back for her super senior season. And then the reigning Missouri Valley Conference Player of the Year and Bryce Caleb had 15 points, had three rebounds, three assists in the matchup as well. And I also want to mention that Jasmine Franklin had four blocks to go with that double-double of 18 points and 13 boards.
Outstanding. And like you said previously before, this Missouri State Lady Bears team, with a lot of returners coming back, there's a lot of excitement for these Lady Bears, who are somehow unranked.
Yeah, a little disrespectful. A
little mid-major disrespect, but, you know,
they've got some opportunities coming up to make some statements. You know, their next game is against North Texas on Sunday. That's the home opener. It'll be here at JQH Arena in Springfield, so 1 o'clock tip-off. And then after that, they'll head on the road, going to Stillwater to take on Oklahoma State. And then, as we mentioned yesterday, Tom Ladd, and the lucky individual that he is, he'll get to go to Los Angeles, California, for a matchup against USC. And then to San Juan, Puerto Rico, where they will play Virginia Tech and LSU on back-to-back nights. So you've got this matchup against North Texas on Sunday. You take care of business there. And then you have four matchups against Power 5 teams in Oklahoma State in the Big 12, USC in the Pac-12, Virginia Tech in the ACC, and LSU in the SEC. So you've got matchups against four of the five, I guess you could say, Power 5 teams. Now, Power 5 doesn't really apply to college basketball because, you've got, you know, those four conferences in the Big 12 and the Big 10, but you've also got the Big East and some other conferences mixed in there as well that can sort of be considered as major teams. But then you play Mizzou, another SEC team. So you've got some matchups before you get into Missouri Valley play against some of those major schools within college basketball to make a statement to get yourself back into the top 25.
Yeah, and they'll be there without question in no time. They're going to be back in the top 25, and of course, this is a team that's coming off a Sweet 16 run, thank you very much, only to lose to the powerhouse that I believe was Stanford. So that is what it is. You know what also what it is? It's Wednesday.
Hump Day!
That's the one.
Yeah, yeah. I wish it was already Friday. Actually, I wish it was tomorrow. You know why?
Why is that?
Going to a Blues game tomorrow, dude.
Ooh.
St. Louis Blues. Speaking of which, they got a win last night against Winnipeg, winning it 3-2 in a shootout. Jordan Binnington, goaltender, was outstanding, stopping 39 out of 41 Winnipeg shots. And the Blues right now, they're 8-2-1. They're off to a hot start. They've won, like I said, 8 games. They have 17 points. That's top in the Western Central Division in the NHL. Thank you very much. And dealing with some COVID problems, but Then again, I feel like that's going to be a common theme for teams this season, guys going into protocol, whether they're vaccinated or not. But it is what it is. They're going to be back home. Get this. They're going to be back home for one home game against Nashville tomorrow. And then they go back on the road. Just like a quick pit stop in St. Louis. And then they go down to, I believe, Carolina and play the Hurricanes. So that's fun and all. But I did mention the fact that it is Wednesday, which means it's time for another segment of Would You Rather Wednesday here on the Rookie Sports Report podcast. Do you have any ideas as to what you're going to ask me? Because I have no idea what I'm going to ask you.
Yep, I got one.
Okay, you go ahead first, because I still got to configure my brain, which will take 2 to 3 business days to ask the question for you. But
all right,
go ahead.
So I've got an interesting one here. And it plays a little bit into one of the first Would You Rather Wednesdays that we did here on the podcast.
Oh, man.
So.
Like 3 years ago?
Yeah, like that.
It feels like it. No.
Would you rather give up internet for the rest of your life or give up heating and air conditioning for the rest of your life?
Heating and air conditioning.
Really?
Yes. I am nothing without the internet. There's so much the internet has to offer. It's, you know, video gaming, cell phone service, watching, you know, movies, playing video games, all these kind of things that you take for granted, honestly. So many times I'll be just going through my phone, just like going through Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. You know, I'll be playing, you know, like we talked about before the show got on, or our podcast started recording, Call of Duty Vanguard, playing 2K, playing MLB The Show. I rely on internet so much, I would not know what to do with myself if there wasn't.
I agree with you.
So I would go with internet because, see, here's the thing. You can kind of, I guess in the summer it'd be kind of tough because we're both cold weather guys. We prefer cold weather over hot weather, or at least I'm that way. I believe you are as well, correct?
Yeah, I'm a cold weather guy.
So I feel like internally we could dress up, layer up to stay warm without, you know, having the heater on or what have you. Now, summertime, be a little bit tough. You can, you know, strip down to, you know, your skivvies or whatever, and that's about it without, you know, being in decent exposure.
Yeah, just move north.
Or just move north. Yeah, that as well.
I'm going to move north. I'll move to, like, northern Iowa or Minnesota.
Yeah, move north, up north to the northern north.
To
yeah.
To the Minnesota, something Minnesota, like that.
Minnesota, yeah.
Where the summer is a little bit shorter.
Obviously.
And, like, it gets to, like, maybe, like, the low 90s at best. Where we avoid
and that's dry. I believe that's probably dry heat up there as well because
it is dry heat up there,
right? But no, I would much rather have no more heating and cooling, like air conditioning or heater products, than lose internet. There's so much I rely the internet upon. That's how I get my news. I don't watch TV. I shouldn't say that. I only watch TV for sporting events. I don't watch TV at all. And hell, I barely even watch streaming networks in general. Though I will say, I have started rewatching, I believe. I went on Netflix for the first time in like a month. And it's stupid on my part because I pay, you know, the $9 a month or whatever to have it, or $7-$8 or whatever. And I never use it because there's nothing on there that I want to watch. But I started either watching or rewatching. I can't remember if I watched it before, but I started watching World War II Events in Color. I began that series last night. And very informative, obviously. And, of course, you and I were both history buffs, and I eat that stuff up like it's, you know, breakfast for dinner. Sorry, Abby Lynn, if you ever listen to this podcast. But, you know, I started watching that again, and that's the only thing that I'll watch. Like, if I'm not playing something, I'm watching something. And if I'm not watching something, I'm doing this. And if I'm not doing this, then I'm working out. If I'm not working out, then I'm sleeping. If I'm not sleeping, I'm dead. That's basically how my life goes.
Oh, okay. That got dark.
I know, that got dark. That went from 100 to 0 in a matter of a second. That's how fast this show can get. This podcast, I should say, could get. It's not a show yet. Keyword yet.
Yet.
But no. Furthermore, I'd rather lose heating and cooling than lose the internet. All right. What to ask the L. Weber?
That's me.
That is you. Isn't that your Twitter handle? It's like L. Weber Radio.
L. Weber Radio. That's me.
There you go. Follow him on Twitter, of course. If you want to, follow me on Twitter, at TheFrizzSports. Actually, what would you rather have? Or actually, what would you rather lose? Ooh. This is on social media.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter or Instagram?
Instagram.
You'd rather lose Instagram.
In a heartbeat.
Really?
In an absolute heartbeat.
Hmm.
I don't even really go on Instagram very much. You know, like, I'll go on Instagram to, like, first of all, like, get rid of notifications or to, like, you know, post a photo once every 4 months, whatever, when, you know, when the future wifey and I go on a trip or we take pictures or whatever, you know, we'll do that. That's about it. But Twitter, I am on Twitter more than any other social media, without a doubt. I would say in terms of social media, I'm on Twitter the most, by far, far and ahead. It is the de facto number one, without a doubt. Number two, I would say, is probably TikTok. I'll probably watch an hour and a half of TikTok a day, maybe. Dude,
it's so addicting.
Like, maybe. Yeah, it's just one of those things, like, I'll just be doing something, like cooking dinner or whatever I'm doing, and I'll just get on there, and I'll watch one video, and it'll make me laugh, and I'll move on to the next video, and pretty soon, like, without sort of realizing it, I am, like, deep down this thing, and I look, and I've been scrolling for 20 minutes on TikTok, and meanwhile, I'm trying to cook dinner, and, you know, the shrimp that I've got sautéing is sort of sticking to the bottom of the pan, and I got to scrape it out, whatever. It just sort of happens that way. And then I would say Instagram for maybe, I don't know, 15 minutes a day, 20 minutes a day. And then I get on Facebook literally to just get rid of notifications and then, like, maybe, like, share our podcast.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Which we, by the way, have just uploaded our edition from yesterday because the technology is now working again. It's a beauty and a curse at the same time.
Yeah.
Technology. Gotta love it. But, you know, with how toxic Twitter can be, I would rather lose Twitter.
I love Twitter.
I can't... See, here's the thing. This perfectly describes my reasoning of Twitter. I will go on Twitter, and within the first 5 minutes, I'll know whether I enjoyed being on this app or I regretted being on this app. Because, you know, there's a lot of just stupid stuff that goes out on Twitter. Just, like, people sharing their opinions and views that you don't agree with. And, you know, you try to share your opinion on it, and then it gets toxic. And then, you know, you get people calling people names, you know, giving them threats, that kind of thing. Like, I don't see that as much on Instagram, you know? Like, Instagram, you got to post a photo, you give yourself a caption, bada bing, bada boom, you're done.
Right.
But Twitter, you speak your mind at times, and you see others speak your mind, you're just like, huh? Like, what did I just look at? And then you see the replies to said tweet, and your brain just goes further back into discombobulation. That's a big word there. Like, I would rather just not deal with it. And like I said, there are times on Twitter where I get on it, I'm just like, oh man, this is great. I love being on Twitter, you know. I'll see, like, the funny memes that you've liked or whatever off of different accounts. I'll see, like, sports news and that kind of thing. But then there's other posts where, like, people are telling people, you know, to, you know, go do this to yourself. If you're this, you're that. Or if you're this, you should do this and that and the other. And I'm just like, why? Like, I did not get on this app to see this. Like, get me off it. There's so many times where I've contemplated just straight up deleting Twitter and taking a break from it, but I can't because it's addicting. It's a drug. It is addicting as hell. And I can't get off of it. So if I could, and like I said, I'm addicted because, so right now I can't, but if I could, I would just completely erase Twitter out of my memory and just be straight Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Snapchat. Because like I said, Twitter, it can be a fun place, but more times than not, for me at least, it's toxic.
Yeah. I love it.
I'm glad you do. But the one thing I do love the most of all out of everything social media-wise is this podcast.
Mm.
Good segue, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
Thank you. I'll be here all day. but we won't be here for much longer because we are now getting close to the 1 hour mark. If not, we already passed it. Oh, we're actually under an hour right now. 54 minutes.
Not bad.
I also just realized why I couldn't play that cut earlier from Max Hellman is because you can't play another Audacity clip if you're already recording.
Ah.
So I had to open Audition, and that cost me 5 years of my life. So thanks, Audacity. I appreciate it. I feel like You know, honestly, I'm such a dinosaur when it comes to, like, the new technology you guys know here. And I say new technology, I mean just Adobe Audition. Because growing up, like, I could not afford Adobe Audition, so I just went straight to Audacity because it was user-friendly and it was free. So it's like teaching an old man new tricks or an old dog new tricks, but the old dog is 22 years old. So I don't partake in being old, or I don't fit in that category. I just need some time. Time heals all wounds. Man, what do you got going on for the rest of the day? Just relaxing, chilling. You got to work. I'm assuming you have to work here again.
It's true. I'll be back for the coach's show, for the Den with Coach Petrino.
Oh yeah,
tonight. Yep, with Art hosting with Coach Petrino. That will be from 7 until 8 o'clock right here on ESPN The Jock. So I'll be here running that.
6 to 9 or like 6 to 11? Or it just depends on like...
It's 6 until whenever the show's done.
Oh, okay.
So I'll be doing some overnight news tonight as well. But who knows? I'll probably be here till 9 o'clock probably.
There you go. There you go. Because, like, it'd be weird just for you to be up here at 6 and then just leave straight up at, like, 7. Which is somewhat what I did beforehand before we started this podcast. I would just come in and do Ned Reynolds' show, The Sports Reporters, from 9 to 11. And then at 9:15, turn off the board and, you know, go back home to my boring life. And then just be that. But now we're here, and I'm here for over 4 to 5 hours a day. Though that's chump change compared to what you work. You work 9 to 10 hour days on the regular.
Yeah, sometimes.
Good money, though. Well, considering the circumstances. But that's besides the point. Also coming up in the near future, we're still doing football.
We are.
November. High school football, nonetheless. What are you doing on Friday?
So I will be at Lamar High School broadcasting the Lamar Fairgrove District Championship game in Class 2. It's going to be a great game. It's sort of a state championship game.
Sure.
Is how you could describe this. Both teams are undefeated. Lamar is currently ranked number one in the state in Class 2, as they usually are. They're an absolute dominant power in Class 2. And Fairgrove is the number two ranked team in Class 2. So, you know, it's sort of tough how that works, but, you know, it's geographical. Geographically is how they put these districts together, excuse me. So these two teams, despite being ranked number one and number two in the state, are having to play in a district title game. So this could more or less be the state championship game, if you want to put it that way. So that's where I will be on Friday.
Do you know if you're doing it with anybody yet or just by yourself?
I'm not exactly sure who I'm doing the game with.
Yeah, I'm in that same boat. I'm not sure if I'm just doing it with someone or if I'm doing it with Casper the Friendly Ghost, who is mute. But
usually, every game I've done this year, we've had a color person there with us to run the game. So I would imagine we'll have somebody there in both of our cases. There will be somebody there to help us with color, or if we wanted to do color, they would do play-by-play and vice versa.
Right. Well, I'll say this. I'm a much more better play-by-play guy than color guy.
I like both of them, but yeah, I prefer the play-by-play side a little bit more.
Of course, yeah, I prefer play-by-play as well. But yeah, you mentioned what I'll be doing on Friday. I will be in Lebanon, Missouri, doing the Class 5 District 6 or Class 5 District 5. Anyway, I'm doing a Class 5 District Championship between Glendale and Lebanon. And, of course, Logan, you saw that game, the regular season matchup of that game in Glendale almost a month ago now, probably a little bit over it now, and that came down to the wire, and things got chippy, things got, you know.
Certainly did.
Pretty exciting, so.
Game-winning field goal in the first matchup between these two teams.
What should I expect from what you saw?
Complete polar opposites is how I would describe it. Glendale is 5 wide. They throw the ball all over the yard. That's how they like to go about it offensively. They go for it on fourth down. They don't kick extra points very often. They don't punt very often. That's how Glendale approaches things. Lebanon, on the other hand, is they're under center. It's I formations. It's split backs. It's downhill, north and south running. 3-4 yards and a cloud of dirt, turf pellets, you know?
Yeah.
It's very differentiating styles offensively between these two teams. One is very running gun, air raid, getting up and down the field
West
quickly.
West Coast offense, yeah.
Trying to generate points as quickly as possible, trying to just basically outscore the other team. Lebanon likes to run the football, ball control, controlling the time of possession, the pace of the game, and giving their defense time to get a rest and try to shut down the opposing team's offense. That's how this game's going to go.
Well, I'm hoping it's just one of those ones where, like you said, it's 32-29, and, you know, it's always the best whenever you're calling close games as a broadcaster. Because, like, you get locked into it. You feel, like, you feel your moment or whatever. Like, you're going to make, like, an iconic call. You kind of feel that moment. It's few and far between, but as broadcasters, you cherish it. You really do. And I'm looking forward to the potential of one coming up this Friday. And, of course, you're going to have that opportunity as well because you're watching the two best teams in Class 2, Fairgrove and Lamar. They're going to go at it, and your game will be on this station that we're presented by here, 96.9 The Jock, also 99.9 and 1060 AM. Meanwhile, I'll be on our sister station, AM 560, 93.3 FM, KWTO.
Yeah, some great high school football going to be taking place here on our stations come Friday night.
And it's a shame that's got to end because shortly afterwards, we're going to be talking about high school basketball. And as a matter of fact, as you all know well and good, I do SBU athletics. And their final home game is going to be this upcoming Saturday. They're going to play Missouri S&T based out of Rolla, Missouri. And then, you know, I kind of, I'll be sad for a little bit. You know, I'll be sad that that the road is in. But then I'll be re-happy, if that's even a word, because then basketball season starts literally 3 days later on the 16th.
There you go.
As SBU, excuse me, will host Barkley College, their men's basketball team, and looking forward to that and just looking forward to probably the best time of the year as a sports fan. I love basketball.
Oh, this right here is the best time of the year.
Yeah.
Where football and basketball overlap.
Are intertwining, yes.
Oh, man. It's my favorite time of year. It's hectic, to say the least, especially for us involved in sports media.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hectic. You know, I ran the Missouri State football game on Saturday. And had to turn back around and ran the Missouri State game on Tuesday. We've had Drury underway now. So we've got Missouri State football going. We've got high school football going. We've got Missouri State men's and women's basketball, Drury men's and women's basketball running. Eventually we'll get underway and we'll get high school basketball running on these stations as well. So it's going to, you know, we're juggling a lot of balls in the air right now, but we've got a lot of great people here at the studio that are helping us get this thing running and putting out some great content.
And the most important part of it, we're getting paid to do it as well.
100%.
And with that being said, I think it's 100% the time to end this edition of the Rookie Sports War Podcast. We have now surpassed the 1 hour mark here on this edition, but it's been a good one. Talked college basketball, Odell Beckham Jr., whether he'll be a Chief, a Saint, a Packer, who knows. You know, honestly, I wouldn't mind him wearing the Navy Star or the Dallas Cowboys.
But, oh, really? Yeah, but you were super skeptical about him signing with the Chiefs,
know,
huh?
You know, I'll forget about that if he decides to lace up the Navy Star. Though I will say, after that performance against Denver, I'm not sure if
you guys are okay. You've got CeeDee Lamb and you've got Amari Cooper.
Yeah, well, you'll be okay. Dak did not look good coming out of that leg injury. But anyway, that's besides.
Still got me 18 fantasy points.
Really?
Yeah.
My quarterbacks did jack squat because Kyler Murray was injured and the Buffalo Bills just laid an egg against Jacksonville up. And then Dak did not have a good performance until like the final 5 minutes of the fourth quarter against the Denver Broncos. And of course, that game, Dallas lost. Ugh, I'm bringing back bad memories. I need to end this now. Logan, thanks as always. We'll do it again tomorrow, God willing.
Absolutely.
For Logan Weber, I'm Matthew Rizzo. This has been the Wednesday edition, the November 10th edition of the Rookie Sports Report Podcast. Hope you all have a great rest of your day. And hey, don't let anyone tell you the odds. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Kansas City native Paul Rudd is world's sexiest man alive.